Welcome everybody to Essex Church, the home of Kensington Unitarians. My name is Caroline Blair and I'm a fairly long-standing member of this congregation, taking the service while our minister Sarah is away. A week ago I was at our sister church in Cape Town, where they were very keen that I should bring greetings back here. They were very, very hospitable and friendly. When I went to that church, we were slightly late, verging on late, and weren't quite sure where it was. We screeched to a halt in the main road, just next to a traffic warden, leapt out of our car and said, where's the church? And he said, oh, it's up there on the right. So we scurried down there. When we came out of the church, the police were there issuing tickets, and we noticed for the first time our car was right next to a great big sign saying pay and display parking only. So we were a bit downcast, but our traffic warden appeared. I got the impression he was a good deal lower in the pecking order than the police, and he said, oh, it's all right, I've put money in the meter for you. He said, I can't have you getting fined for going to church. So we were very touched by the kindness and hospitality in various ways, and hope that people coming here have some feeling of being received with kindness and hospitality as well. Some opening words. Whether you have come here with heart full or heart empty, with spirits high or low, rested or tired, hopeful or despairing, you are welcome here. Whether you have come here out of habit, conviction, loneliness or curiosity, you belong here. You belong simply because you are here, and all that you have and all that you are is welcome here. This morning we are together, a community, with our own energy and our own heartbeat. And some words for the time of year from the minister at Bury St Edmunds, Martin Ginkey, who is American, you can tell from the wording. As we sizzle in summer, fall into fall, then wither in winter, now let us spring into spring. As the joy of each bud breaks forth, let our hearts burst with the warmth and radiance of renewal. New life, new hope. Let us spring into spring. I'm going to light our chalice candle, as is being done in Unitarian churches all over the world. And I've got a few words here from the American Unitarian Universalist site. It's children's chalice lighting, but I thought it was nice. We light this chalice to remind ourselves to treat all people kindly, because they are our brothers and sisters. We light this chalice to remind ourselves to take good care of the earth, because it is our home. We light this chalice to remind ourselves to live lives full of goodness and love, because that is how we will become the best people we can be. Right, the story of the ant and the grasshopper by Aesop actually is rather bald and a bit dull. So this is the story of the ant and the grasshopper by Aesop, slightly rewritten. One summer's day, when golden corn showed bright against the sky, a happy cricket paused his song when a tired ant came by. The ant was struggling to bear a giant ear of wheat. He looked thirsty, tired and dusty, and resentful of the heat. Poor brother ant, please take a break. These sunny afternoons are made for snooker at the pub at Handy Wetherspoons. I can't stop now, the ant replied. My wheat store's incomplete. I can't abide the winter without bowls of shredded wheat. Why think of that, the cricket scoffed. It's barely mid-September. I understand it will be years and years until November. The ant just shrugged. No easy task for an invertebrate. And struggled on, consigning cricket to the wiles of fate. The cricket joyfully sang on, forgetting all the words, and got the highest scores at Scrabble and at Angry Birds. But to his clear amazement, the days turned cold and grey. The pub declined his debit card, his phone died with no pay. I need a dull but solvent friend to pay me to be fun. That ant will do a deal, a buttered crumpet for each pun. The ant refused to hand across a single grain or bean. I'm prudent, wise and sensible, or possibly just mean. The dying cricket mused on all the tunes he'd hummed and sung. Oh, well, never regret, I say. Live fast and then die young. And a slightly more existential approach to it from the Muppets, taking more account, I think, of the sometimes painful randomness of existence. I, the eagle, will now read a fable which should serve as a moral lesson to us all. Once upon a time, there was an ant and a grasshopper. It was warm and sunny where they lived, but the ant worked day and night from dawn to dusk, storing food for the long, hard winter he knew would come. Ant, toil and labour, work and strife are all that matter in this life. Eagle, oh ho, the ant is a wonderful character. But meanwhile, the lazy, pleasure-loving grasshopper sang and danced with appalling abandon. Grasshopper, winter, fall and snow will come, but now it's time to have some fun. Shocking, shocking. And eventually, just as expected, winter came. And then it was, dear listeners, that the grasshopper drove his sports car to Florida, and the ant got stepped on. The Muppets demonstrating, as it says in Ecclesiastes, that the race is not always to the swift and the fight is not always to the strong. We will touch on that later, perhaps more seriously. First time I ever came to this church, it was the first time I came to any Unitarian church, I wasn't sure what to expect. I was greeted by Patricia Walker, who most of us knew and who has now sadly died, but she was the most natural greeter. She just honed in on anybody who was new or had not been here for a long time and just made them as welcome as anyone could. After the service, she said, "What did I think of it?" And I said, "Oh, I really liked that reading by Orion Mountain Dreamer." And when I came back next week, she had bought me a copy of the book and gave it to me, which I thought was hospitality above and beyond. You can see why I kept on coming. And I think there's a little bit of me that's been waiting ever since for an opportunity to read the same reading in the hope that it's well known. It's called The Welcome by Canadian writer Orion Mountain Dreamer. Some of you probably know it. It doesn't interest me what you do for a living. I want to know what you ache for. And if you dare to dream of meeting your heart's longing. It doesn't interest me how old you are. I want to know if you will risk looking a fool for love, for your dreams, for the adventure of being alive. It doesn't interest me what planets are squaring off your moon. I want to know if you have touched the centre of your own sorrow, if you have been opened by life's betrayals, or have become shriveled and closed from fear of further pain. I want to know if you can sit with pain, mine or your own, without moving to hide it, or fade it, or fix it. I want to know if you can be with joy, mine or your own, if you can dance with wildness and let the ecstasy fill you to the tips of your fingers and toes, without cautioning us to be careful, be realistic, or remember the limitations of being human. It doesn't interest me if the story you are telling me is true. I want to know if you can disappoint another to be true to yourself, if you can bear the accusation of betrayal and not betray your own soul. I want to know if you can be faithful and therefore be trustworthy. I want to know if you can see beauty even when it's not pretty every day, and if you can source your life from God's presence. I want to know if you can live with failure, yours and mine, and still stand on the edge of the lake and shout to the silver of the full moon, yes. It doesn't interest me to know where you live or how much money you have. I want to know if you can get up after a night of grief and despair, weary and bruised to the bone, and do not what needs to be done for the children. It doesn't interest me who you are, how you came here. I want to know if you will stand in the centre of the fire with me and not shrink back. It doesn't interest me where or what or with whom you have studied. I want to know what sustains you from the inside when all else falls away. Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? Why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his glory was dressed like one of these. Words that you probably recognise from the Sermon on the Mount, suggesting that Jesus was of the grasshopperist tendency. It's actually quite amusing. If you look online at Sunday school resources concerning the Sermon on the Mount, because you can see just how twitchy people get about those words and how they're going to explain them to young people. There's clearly this fear that young people will hear it as, look at the lilies of the field, they do absolutely nothing except make themselves look beautiful, and everybody loves them, which is not considered a good message. So education resources are full of things like, of course Jesus did not mean this. I think the important fact with the lilies of the field, the reason they neither toil nor spin, is that they actually have no moving body parts, so they're poorly equipped for toiling and spinning. Photosynthesizing and drawing up water by osmosis are about the limit of their abilities. If a lily of the field's kept a daily diary, they might write in it, number one, be a lily. That would be as far as it went, there would be no number two. Now, throughout history, almost nobody has liked the story of the ant and the grasshopper. It's actually quite hard to find a version that has the same ending that Aesop gave it. People just don't like this ant refusing food and allowing the grasshopper to die. Really, life is not like that. Most ants die before their first winter. They may, as the Muppets description has it, they might get stood on, but they probably get eaten or desiccate in the sun or drown in a storm. Grasshoppers do die in the cold, not because they've run out of food, because they're genetically programmed to die after quite a short time. Ants don't sin because they are ants. I've never yet seen an ant on the X Factor. But to perceive their lives as relentless toil seems misguided. It's rather hard to say what goes on in an ant's brain, but I would guess an ant's brain would show a different pattern of impulses while they're foraging for food and while they are in the process of being stood on. They're bound to find it disagreeable to be stood on. When they're living a life appropriate for their species, finding food, replenishing the nest, following their comrades, I think their brains would register that all is well and good. If you go to London Zoo, there's an ant exhibition where you can watch quite fascinating tropical ants scurrying up ropes and down branches and getting their food and round in a circle. I think if you were regarding it as an art installation, you could give it a whimsical title. And I suggest The Blissful Song of the Ant. To a foraging ant, foraging is what he was born to do. That ant is in harmony with the universe. And this scurrying around foraging is his personal song of joy. Now, the grasshopper gets a bad rap in Aesop. His singing and hopping about is seen as unproductive idleness and is given no respect. But when we hear, now here's a word, the sturdulation of a grasshopper, I bet that word's never been heard in here before, we don't think, lazy thing. That is a rude word. The grasshopper, by making that noise, is defending his territory and attracting a mate, both very important tasks in his short life. Sturdulation is his trade and profession, if you like, not just a hobby. And like the ant, I think his tiny grasshopper brain is set fair while he does it. He's doing the right things for a grasshopper, just as the ant is for an ant, and the lily for a lily. Things are more complicated for human beings because we have so much more choice. Now, there are times in our lives we don't have more choice, times of critical illness, perhaps. We may have very few choices. If we're looking after someone very young, very old, or very ill, it requires all our reserves of time and energy. But most of us do have quite a lot of choice, quite a lot of the time. Now, there's a certain kind of book, sort of like the interface between motivational and spiritual books. The book shops are full of these things. And they can be a bit oppressive, I think, and determined to make us all feel like failures. Say yes to life. Dream dreams. Set goals to achieve them. Get up earlier. Write poetry as the sun rises. Sit by a waterfall and focus on each individual drop of water. 100 things to do before you die. if you have unlimited time and money and want to live someone else's dream. Now, on the front of the Order of Service, there's a sentence by Camus. Real generosity towards the future lies in giving all to the present. And when I saw it, I fell in love, as sometimes one does, with the phrase generosity to the future. But I want to make it clear, my view of giving all to the present does not mean the kind of stuff I'm referring to above. Giving all to the present does not mean setting goals, getting up earlier in the morning, writing poetry, parachute jumping, paragliding in Mongolia, sitting by waterfalls, learning French, practicing the piano, reading Proust, joining a philosophy class, going to a party where you know no one at all and talking to each person, helping out in a soup kitchen or any other prescribed activity, unless it's the right activity for you. It's fatally easy to beat oneself up for what seems to be permanent shortcomings. You find yourself saying, I'm so disappointed, I've only done a quarter of what I meant to today, I'm always like that. I think that's a warning sign. If you're always like that, that is what you're like. You're a grasshopper trying to force yourself to be an industrious ant, perhaps. An ant trying to force yourself to be a zany grasshopper. There really is a time to say to yourself, hang on, why have I disappointed myself again? Is it my actions that are wrong, or is it my expectations? So when I say be generous to the future, I don't mean pile up thousands and thousands of worthy activities that you can gloat over later. I mean have fewer regrets. It may not be possible for a thinking, feeling adult to go through life with no regrets at all. It's probably right that we do have some. But surely we should not be regretting our very selves. If you've spent the last 15 years regretting again that you haven't learned French, then learning French was not the song that you wanted to sing. Knowing French would be very nice, but learning it is hard and time-consuming. You would have missed out on some fun. Some supposedly, I know, watching bad TV programmes that would have given you entertainment, humour, affection, insight, new empathy into your fellow human beings. Now, I challenge you to find a motivational book that says, go out and watch more bad television. But if that's what feels right to you, it is part of your life's song, and watching it is the very last thing you should regret. Next time you find yourself thinking, I'm so comfortable here with my books, I really should go to the gym for that spinning class, remind yourself that Jesus specifically singled out the lack of spinning as being admirable in lilies. There's a sentence in, now Women Who Run With The Wolves was the reading group choice last week, and there was a sentence in it which I'm just about to misquote, because she's talking specifically about your physical body, but I thought it worked well, talking about your whole self. Our own self is not like a dumbbell that we are sentenced to carry for life, but a series of doors and dreams and poems through which we can learn and know all manner of things. Now, I want to make it clear, I'm not recommending a life of spiritual or physical or mental idleness here. It's probably good for all of us to set ourselves challenges, to stretch ourselves to our utmost, to give everything we have to something we really care about. But outside life's catastrophes, which will happen to, I guess, every life at some time, challenges should surely be what we choose. In times of quiet, we need to listen to our own song, to find our own natural path, set our own challenges, and let no one try to make us feel we have failed merely for being different. In the final book he wrote before he died, Unitarian Universalist minister Forrest Church summed up his life's beliefs. So it's pretty simple for me. Love when you can. Do the work that is yours to do. Be the person that is yours to be at any given time. Think to wish for what is yours at this very moment. To love, to serve, to touch, to know. Think to wish for all that is yours to have. Think to wish for all that is yours to do. And think to wish that you might be who it is that you might most fully be.